Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And welcome to Locked On Cavaliers, the official Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and Hardwood Paroxysm. And today I am joined by one of my coworkers over at Fear the Sword. He's our chief correspondent up in Canada. That's Justin Rowe. And Justin, how's it going?
Doing good. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Always good to have you on. There's actually somewhat a lot to talk about right now, which is sort of surprising considering we're in the slowest part of the NBA offseason. It's late August. There's not a heck of a lot going on, but there's actually some things happening with the Cavs. And that starts with a report from JoeVarnofCleveland.com that Mo Williams is considering retirement. And there's some layers to this. We don't know for sure if it's going to happen. The Cavs could waive him. They could try to trade him and dump his salary to another team. And I don't know about you, Justin, but I was caught a little bit off guard by this. He picked up his option for next year. He won a title. There seemed to be potential for him to be the backup point guard on this team this year. But then again, you think about the knee injuries he went through last year and all the stuff that Varden reported about him wanting to coach and wanting to go out as a title winner. Maybe it shouldn't have caught us off. Shouldn't have caught me off guard, rather.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other factor was Brian Windhorst, a couple weeks ago on the radio, had addressed the fact that Mo Williams isn't feeling himself physically. He can't really go through full practices and stuff like that, and was seriously contemplating retirement. Now, that didn't get picked up. I don't know if that was kind of his sense of the situation prior to Mo Williams picking up his option, and he was just relaying that information, but having that knowledge out there and knowing that Williams isn't himself physically kind of was an indicator for me that it was a possibility and it didn't catch me as off guard. Obviously, we're kind of banking on Mo Williams being the backup heading into next season, especially with either Kay Felder or Jordan Jackemup McRae as the only two other options. So with that in mind, it kind of does make a more pressing need at the backup point guard position, at least for the regular season, because what we saw in the finals and when the games really mattered and the margin for error was slight, Kyrie Irving and LeBron James were really the only two point guards for the team.
Yeah, and I think you're right. When it comes to the playoffs, the traditional quote-unquote backup point guard isn't going to play as much because they have LeBron and they have Curry, and those guys are just going to eat up so many minutes. I mean, this year LeBron was basically the de facto backup point guard.
Well, he was almost the starting point guard.
Oh, wow. You hate Kyrie Irving or something, Justin? Just kidding.
I don't hate Kyrie Irving. Yeah, I know. Watch. I mean, he's the primary initiator lot of plays.
He's the best passer on the team. He's the guy who initiates the offense. Even at backup, quote-unquote backup point guard, Matthew Dellavedova, in my head, is a shooting guard. Like, he's not really a point guard, because he doesn't actually dribble or pass all that well.
No, he can initiate the pick and roll. He runs a pick and roll well with Tristan Thompson. But his value in the league is as a combo guard. He has good height. He has good size. Good spot-up shooter, which is actually why he made a great fit for Milwaukee, because they want Giannis Antetokounmpo initiating the offense the same way that LeBron James does it. So I think when you're looking at other options at point guard for the Cavs moving forward, at least with that backup position, you look for guys that can play off ball, because in all likelihood, we're probably going to see a lot more of the LeBron and bench mob when Kyrie goes to the bench. I'm not too concerned long term, or at least when it comes to playoffs in the finals, with the lack of a backup point guard, because I think LeBron playing with Channing Frye and three other wings. Like, I think Mike Dunleavy might be able to replace Dellavedova in those lineups. I don't think it's a problem to have a wing instead of a combo guard there. But at least for the regular season, especially with Kyrie's health being a reasonable thing to question, I think you need to have a little bit of depth there and need to explore other options.
I know there's a guy that you really, really like, and we'll get to him in a second and go through some of the other options out there, but I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second and say why I don't think the Cavs have to rush and get a guy if Mo Williams does indeed retire or if they waive him, because they have until Wednesday to stretch him and space out his contract over the next couple of years if that's the route they go. So.
Yeah. You know,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Okay, just sorry to cut you off, but I agree with that. Like, in principle, why I was fine with letting Dellavedova go, even though he did sign a fairly reasonable contract for his value, I think when you look at Kayfelder and Jordan McRae for the 10 minutes maybe combined a game that they'll play, 10 to 15 minutes, I think it's fine to go with them. I mean, there's going to be a drop-off. And I think maybe you lose maybe two or three more games over the course of the regular season at worst case scenario, assuming Kyrie stays healthy, of course. But I think having those guys play with LeBron, the drop off isn't meaningful enough, especially for a team like the Cavs, where there isn't anyone close in the East that's going to catch them. And even if it does, we've seen that home court doesn't really matter for these Cavs. They find another gear in the playoff, and that other gear doesn't really involve the backup point guard. So to your point, I am fine with them waiting and kind of waiting it out, not necessarily rushing to find a backup point guard with the options that are available now.
Yeah, and that's where my argument lies. I mean, I'm not totally convinced on Kayfelder, as I know some people are. I mean, we had internally at Further Sword, we're working on something right now where we're perhaps ranking the Cavs players. But we had someone on our staff that has him. I mean, he got votes that were, in my opinion, like way too high. I just don't like look at him, and I know he's talented. And I talked to Greg Campy like a week ago, and he's really high on him, but he's his coach.
Right.
He's just not that big. He doesn't have a knockdown jumper off the ball, and rookies struggle. Like, rookies just never play that well. And also just look at it this way. They may end up signing somebody, but partially because there is no great option out there immediately, because I don't think there's a huge drop-off between Felder and one of those guys and whatever. Maybe you just want to see what you can get out of Felder. The other thing is, it's financially a little bit prudent to just not sign a guy right now. I know Dan Gilbert has a lot of money. I know that it's mentally a little bit more relaxing as a fan to just know that they went and got somebody. But that money is going to be taxed. That salary is going to be taxed, and we haven't even seen the Cavs sign J.R. Smith yet.
Yeah, they got to get on that.
Yeah, there's all this money they haven't even spent yet. LeBron's making a ton. You have four guys making tons of money. J.R. could be making $15 million a year. Like, it just might make sense to just ease the burden a little bit to not go get a point guard right now, see what you get out of Kayfelder, and just leave those two roster spots open. I mean, they're still going to be relatively equipped to rest guys as they need to, and like you kind of alluded to, I don't know how much this team's going to care about the regular season. They kind of know when they need to turn it up a gear. They've admitted that they did it last year, they did it the year before, absolutely, and if there's a team that I feel comfortable saying they know when to turn it on, it's because LeBron's great at doing that. So I don't know, I'm not like overly worried. I almost, you know, you'd rather maybe them have a point guard, I guess, but I don't think they have to.
No. And it might be something that they just look to address at the trade deadline the same way they did last year with Channing Frye. They kind of waited to see what they had in Timofey Mozgov last year before realizing, okay, unless something changes in the next 2 months here, we're going to need to address this backup center position. And they went out and got Channing Frye. So it might be the same thing, because really they don't. I mean, positions are so silly. If they can get a shooting guard that can create some playmaking and stuff like that, if New Orleans is looking to dump Tyreke Evans at some point this season, I think you go after that with the trade deadline, a guy that can play multiple positions. I don't think you necessarily need a true, quote-unquote, point guard to back up Kyrie Irving. I would be more than fine with kind of rolling with Kayfelder, but I do think there are options out there. None of them are enticing, but Certainly, Kendall Marshall kind of stands out to me as somebody that's going to be very cheap. He can't really create his own offense, but he's a decent spot-up shooter, 37% for his career, and that's after last year coming off an ACL tear, dragging down his average. Can run the pick and roll, pass first player. It's not pretty, it's not great, but it could be a mutually beneficial situation where Marshall would be looking for the Cavs to kind of elevate his standing in the league, playing for a contender, while the Cavs are just looking for anybody with a little bit of experience to kind of take pressure off Kay Felder as he adjusts to the NBA.
Marshall is one of the guys that I think is out there. Mario Chalmers is another. Norris Cole, a Cleveland State product, is another. And there's other guys, Kirk Heinrich, Steve Blake. Ty Lawson would have been an option, but he signed with the Kings. Which is
yeah, I don't think you want Ty Lawson and J.R. Smith in the same locker room.
No.
And then Norris Cole, we had chops on the Fierce Sword podcast the other day, and he was saying how, from what he heard, Cole wants about $10 million a year. So, I mean, he's not going to get that, but given his unrealistic expectations, you got Chalmers coming off an ACL tear, I believe, like, it really gets ugly in a hurry when you look at what's left at backup point guard.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that none of those guys are actually that good. Just to look at the list, Kendall Marshall was really, really not good last year playing with the 76ers. Was coming off an ACL injury from the year before, but just wasn't good. Didn't look like healthy or just productive at all. Norris Cole was okay last year, but it's not only does he want a lot of money, supposedly, but he isn't represented by Clutch anymore. So, I mean, that sort of matters when you talk about LeBron a little bit.
Yeah, he's out of the equation at that point.
Yes, which is sort of hilarious on so many levels. But and then Mario Chalmers, I think, is the guy that most people, including myself, would say, okay, that guy makes sense. He was with LeBron in Miami for the longest time. He was pretty good with the Grizzlies last year and really helped them. But he's coming off an Achilles injury, and he recently tweeted that he is good to go, that he's cleared to play. But I don't really ever trust guys that are coming off Achilles injuries to be productive.
Especially at that age.
He's almost 30, and it's just not really the most ideal situation. I just don't look at any of those guys and think, okay, the Cavs have to go get one. I just don't see the need. I see maybe you wait a little bit. The trade deadline could be super interesting because if they really wanted to, they do have those trade exceptions that David Griffin has manufactured over the past couple of years. And maybe someone comes available. I just don't think there's a huge need right now. And when it comes down to it, backup point guard on the Cavs is sort of a weird role because, A, they don't really need a traditional one, because they need one who can do what Deli did and play defense and hit threes. And two, when it comes to the playoffs, that guy's going to have his role so marginalized. It's just, I don't know how much effort and anxiety you go in wondering what you need to get out of him. Like, if Kay Felder, in the first 2 months of the season, can prove that he can at least grow into a bigger role, or at least they think he can get to that point, I think there's a pretty good chance they don't sign one until later in the year if the right veteran gets cut and they just pick him up on the waiver wire or something.
No, I totally agree. And as I said before, I think ideally you look for either a two or a three that can also provide some playmaking, because you want someone that's going to be able to contribute later on. And if it is strictly just a point guard, it's not going to be that player.
Yeah, the Cavs don't need that player. They don't need the Darren Collison archetype of backup point guard. It'll be interesting to see if they do end up adding anybody, because there are theoretically some guys that could be available. I know there's some named veterans out there that people have asked us about on the show and put in the Fearless World comments and talked about. But I just don't think there's a whole need for them to get anybody. And, you know, maybe they'll do what they do with McGray and find someone in the D League that they like too. That's also certainly a possibility. To move on to the other thing we're going to talk about today, ESPN last week from Kevin Pelton recently, they put out the win projections for next season for the Eastern Conference. And the Cavs, not too surprisingly, were on top. They were the top team in the East. They were, you know, a little bit lower than I guess I would have thought. But they were ahead of everybody in the East. And Justin, before we kind of look at this a little bit more in depth and kind of generally talk about who maybe could challenge the Cavs, Do you think there's any argument out there that you should say, hey, the Cavs aren't the best team in the East heading into next year?
No, I don't think there's any argument you can make that the Cavs wouldn't be the top team in the East. It's hard to get too upset over Pelton's projections when they are strictly based off statistics. Like, it's just his RPM and other factors, and those are the results. It's not subjective. There's nothing else other than his formula. So factoring in Kyrie Irving coming off knee surgery last year, looking how much better he looked in the playoffs, that's not going to factor in to the projections and stuff like that. Kyrie's going to take another step forward. I think the team's going to have better chemistry. Not having Mozgov, who is basically the only player in the NBA that was able to stop and slow down the Cavs big three, not having him on the court is going to make a big difference. I mean, we saw what the Cavs did in the Eastern playoffs with, I think it's fair to say when you look at their finals performance, they're probably only going at about 80% most of the time, but simply having that stretch five, the two options at center was either Tristan Thompson being a pain in the butt for everybody, bringing the energy and meshing well with the big three, or Channing Frye just spacing it out and having LeBron with four shooters around him. Either of those things take so little effort and are so easy to execute. I think with more chemistry, with Kyrie getting better than he was last season, with Kevin Love being more comfortable with the team, LeBron trusting the team, it willing to take a backseat and play off ball, I think all of those factors are just going to make the Cavs too difficult to contend with, even in the regular season, where they likely won't be trying as hard as they will against the Golden State Warriors or whoever they face in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this when I did our look ahead at the season schedule podcast. I've already marked down the December 26th game against the Pistons as just a loss that they're going to lose by like 15. Because they're playing the Warriors in Cleveland the day before, and I'd be shocked if they didn't really get up for that game. And then they're going to Detroit the next day. They're going to lose that game just because...
That one and New Year's Eve in Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be bored out of their minds in Charlotte. JR is going to be drunk during the game.
He'll just be taking a charter to Atlanta.
Yeah. They're probably going to, like, helicopter in, like, 15 minutes before the game and helicopter right out to Atlanta right after.
Yeah, go back to Vegas. Just go back and recreate the title party. Yeah, I mean, it's destined to happen. Yeah, but I mean, this team's just going to get bored this season just because I don't think they feel like, partially because of LeBron, largely because of LeBron feels this way, that they don't have to be up every night. And
they didn't care when they had something to prove last season.
Yeah.
What do you expect this
I mean,
year?
Justin, did you know that the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals?
I was not aware.
I'm here to enlighten you and the rest of our listeners that the Warriors did, in fact, blow a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I truly appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that knowledge.
That's what I'm here for. This is a public service podcast. But in all seriousness, the East should, in my opinion, be a little bit more interesting next season. I don't think there's necessarily a team that jumps out at me, and I think they're going to challenge the Cavs. But I think there's two teams in my mind that I'm curious to see how they do. Well, I guess three. I think the Celtics are first, just because I like... I mean, as much as Al Horford has been beaten up by Tristan Thompson the past few years, he's a very good player, and he's going to do very well in Boston.
Well, let's be more specific. Al Horford was beat up last year by Kevin Love. Kevin Love, if you look at his... If you look at the media stats, Kevin Love on the court, I think Al Horford shoots about 30% worse for the year with Kevin Love on the court. Tristan Thompson covers Al Horford, but... Tristan Thompson covers Paul Millsap, but Al Horford's interesting because he is aging. He's not able to put the ball on the floor the same way that he used to. And I as much as I love the pickup for Boston, like, I think that's a really smart pickup. It helps you attract other free agencies probably, or other free agents, sorry. But I honestly think, like, it's not going to make that big of a difference. I don't think you go from first round exit to adding the Hawks' second-best player who's aging and all of a sudden become a contender on the Cavs level. Like, I don't think they even pass Toronto, in my opinion, but I think there's a clear tier where the Cavs are the top, Toronto and Boston are in the second tier, and then after that, there's like 10 teams that could potentially make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The other team that I'm really interested in, one of them at least, is the Raptors, just because I know that people, especially Cavs Twitter, gives them a lot of crap because they're arguing for Kyrie over Lowry, and DeRozan's a very frustrating player, but I think they are good. Not having Biombo certainly hurts, and they'll have to figure some stuff out there. I mean, he was useful for them in a way that you have to get more out of Valanciunas, or Jakob Poeltl. They'll have to get some out of the rookie. But they'll probably be fine.
Jared Sullinger.
Yeah, shout out to Sullinger, man. Columbus, Ohio's own Jared Sullinger. But the East, sort of, other than that, is sort of crazy. I think you're right. The one team that really, really interests me is the Pacers. Just because I know that Paul George has this history of fading as the season goes on. But the first time it happened, it was his first real star season. The second time it happened was last year when he faded towards the end of the year, and he was his first full year back from a very, very devastating knee injury. I really like Paul George. I think he's a very, very good player. He's heading towards his prime if he's not right in it, and I like them getting Teague, even though I think George Hill is awesome. I like some of the moves they made. I think that team's probably going to be pretty solid, and I think I'm a little confused by the coaching situation, but I don't think Indiana is necessarily... It wouldn't be the crazy thing to me if they were suddenly facing the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals or something. But there's also just so many teams that I just don't know how to evaluate yet. Like, I look at the Hawks, I don't know what to think of them. I don't know what to think of the Wizards. There's just a lot of teams. But then at the end of the day, I don't think any team out of the East, even if it's close in the regular season, is going to be the team this year to knock LeBron off of his perch in the East.
No, I think it's going to be a little while before that happens. I think if you're looking at who the team is that eventually knocks them off, it might be someone like Milwaukee in like 3 or 4 years. But I really like Indiana. I didn't like the Hill for Teague swap until they added that young. I think once you start thinking of them as a run-and-gun team, where you have Jeff Teague, you have Thad Young playing small ball four, you have Miles Turner, you have Paul George... The only piece that doesn't really fit there is Monte Ellis.
Drives me nuts that he's their two guard. Just play C.J. Miles every single minute, please.
Oh, yes. Yes, C.J. Miles should be playing there. I think that's just a more natural fit with ball-dominant guys. But I really like what they've done, and even though I didn't really condone the firing of Frank Vogel, I think you have to give Larry Bird some credit. Because Larry Bird was coach of the year, and then he thought his voice was kind of running out, so he fired himself, essentially, and went into a front office role. Then he found Rick Carlisle. That worked out well for a while. Got rid of Carlisle, and eventually found Vogel. So I think he has a sense of what he's doing. I'm skeptical, but I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt, because he has proven himself as an executive so far.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and I'm a little concerned, as I alluded to, just because Nate McMillan hasn't really been a head coach in a little bit, and he's not exactly the guy I would have thought they would have went after when they said they wanted to start playing faster, because of his track record and what he was... Like, he was on the staff last year. It's not like they went out and got D'Antoni or something, or got a guy that wanted to play faster or was known for playing faster. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. Before we kind of wrap this up, Justin, if there was one team in the East that you said... You have to make a bet. You have to say they're going to knock off the Cavs. If you just had to take a guess, then who would it most likely be? What team would you pick? What team would you say?
Man, this is going to be really tough to do without throwing shade, but I'm just going to throw shade anyways.
That's okay.
I'm going to go with the Detroit Pistons.
I like it. That is gutsy.
I don't know necessarily how good they are, but given the 09 Magic's juicing with Stan Van Gundy at the helm... Given how the Pistons played the Cavs in the playoffs with Andre Drummond elbowing LeBron in the back of the head, if there's one team I think that would be physical enough to maybe knock LeBron out and then knock the Cavs out, I think it would be the Pistons. They're a really tough team. They're a scrappy team. I think they can get the Cavs out of their element. They can bang them up. I don't think it's likely. I don't think there's any real chance that the Cavs aren't back in the finals defending their championship. But if there's one team that kind of has that mix of great coaching, physical play, and depth, I'm going to go with the Pistons.
I think that's a very interesting choice. It's a choice I'm a fan of just because I came away really impressed with Detroit after that playoff series. I know the Cavs won the series.
Oh, me too.
But like, I just came away so impressed. I like Stanley Johnson. I like Drummond. As much as we're Kyrie fans here on the podcast, if there's a way you want to attack the Cavs defense, it's probably by running a lot of pick and rolls at Kyrie Irving, and Reggie Jackson can do that with Drummond. Tobias Harris can do some things. I like that team. If I was going to pick one, I think I might just have to go with Toronto because I believe in the continuity and I like what they do. But also just like, I, it's almost, I pick them because I look at Boston, I'm like, eh. Like, I know that they have some things they can do that'll frustrate the Cavs, but I don't think it's enough. And I look at, I don't think it's the Pistons' time just yet, and I don't think it's the Bucks or something's time just yet. And I just don't have enough faith in what Indiana's doing.
No, I don't think the Bucks are even a playoff team. Like, they might make it in, but they certainly shouldn't be considered a top eight favorite to make playoffs.
No, they shouldn't. And, I mean, and it's like there's a team like Washington that maybe has a high amount of upside if things just break right. But do you really trust Washington having everything break right after how the past couple of years have gone? And sort of whether I just don't, and I think they're going to make the playoffs, but I'm just not sure how good they actually are. So I would probably say Toronto, but I don't necessarily say that and think they're going to have a legit chance, because I think, as you said a while ago on the show, in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Cavs just sort of turned it on at a point, and then it was a wrap. Like, it was those two games where they didn't play well. It looked
a little – those you could chalk up to Drake and the Toronto nightlife. Like, I think the Cavs were out taking a little too easy after winning their first 10 straight playoff games that year.
Yeah, and then we all know how it turned out, because they beat the Warriors and came back from a 3-1 deficit to win the NBA title. But Justin, thank you for coming on the show today, as always. Where can people find you on Twitter if they're so inclined?
You can find me at Cavs Canada. It's basically Canada, but slap Cavs in there instead of just the C. You can basically find all my stuff. My pinned tweet is a link to my Facebook page where I post a lot of the stuff that I write. So you can find me there. And, of course, you can also find me at Fear the Sword, where I do the bulk of my Cavs writing.
And a fun fact about Justin's Twitter account, for me at least, because he follows me back in the Cavs, we're not at that level yet. If I type in Cavs first, his Twitter account comes up first, so I'm pretty sure Justin just kind of has the market corner there. But he's smart. It's good branding. It's a smart guy up there. Who said Canada didn't know how to brand? But you can find me on Twitter, as always, at CWMWrites. You can find the podcast on Twitter at LockedOnCavs. You can find us on Audio Boom, Google Play, everything. We're also partnered with FanRag Sports, so if you go to today's Fast Break, you can find our podcast there on the Cavs page. And again, if you like us and you like this show and you want to help other people find it, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. It'll just, again, help other people find the show. We'll be back on Thursday when David Zavok makes his return to the show to talk about Kyrie Irving. We're actually heading into a little Kyrie Irving series over the next couple weeks, which is pretty exciting. Got some cool guests in line. But again, we'll see you again on Thursday when David Zavok returns to Locked On Cavs.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.